Today on The Grave Talks, part two of our conversation about the old Idaho Penitentiary in Boise, Idaho, with Visitor Services Coordinator J.C. Brain. What kind of activity is reported there most frequently?
I was going to say, do you want me to give you one of my stories?
Yes, please.
I can be hardened sometimes because I build our haunted house here at Halloween, and you know, I'm a Halloween guy, and so it takes a lot to get me. But one of my most vivid moments, you know, encounters working here was in that building. I was going from the drop room, which is the room below the gallows where the body would have been lowered. I was walking from the drop room downstairs, which is the room underneath the gallows where the body is lowered.
And you call that the drop room?
We call it the drop room. That's, yeah, just because it's what
creepy. Yeah, that's what it is.
It is. Yeah, it's essentially a well, a big kind of open space, and where they're able to clean up and then remove the body. But that's the back door of this building. So when we close up at night, we'll close that door. We'll walk up the stairs to the upstairs area of that building, two-story building. And as I was walking up those stairs, it felt occupied. It felt like it would, with people running back and forth past you.
Oh, that's interesting.
And obviously I was alone on that staircase. And so becoming a little disoriented, also hearing voices upstairs on the second floor, thinking, oh my goodness, you know, there must be people still up here that I'm going to have to remind that we're closing, you know, and that they need to make their way out of the building to the front of the site and get up there, and there's no one up there. So it was almost like, you know, people running upstairs ahead of me and then hearing them too, but then not encountering anything throughout the building while I was there. So a very strange moment.
Yeah. And it was that real to you that you thought, oh, they need to leave the building because we're closing up. I've got to go tell them.
Yep.
That's how real it was.
Yes. And just getting up there and, you know, being alone or not.
Do you experience, is it pretty common to experience like hearing footsteps or the voices as, you know, people who are in and out of that building every day? And I know it's a small staff, but is that something that you guys talk about like over lunch break?
Yeah. There's things that are more common. There's the things that, because our staff do experience a lot of different things, and we kind of essentially are, philosophy on this is, you know, to allow everyone to tell their own story and to have their own philosophy on whether or not the old Idaho Penitentiary is haunted, right? But pretty much everyone who works here is able to trade those stories and ends up with some encounter or some experience of their own. I feel like a lot of the time it's more things that people see out of their, out of the corner of their eye, or, you know, when they're barely paying attention, they turn around and it's not there, you know, seeing faces through windows or through cells, or it's, noises that are made through the building, doors slamming, doors shutting, windows opening, whatever that may be.
And I like that you're open to, rather than having that one skeptic that's like, oh, y'all are crazy, but, you know, being respectful of what's happened to each other.
Right. You exactly. Know,
somebody might be a skeptic and deep down inside thinks y'all are crazy, but it's nice that you're able to have the experience and feel like you're not being judged.
Yeah. I mean,
I think that's important.
We welcome anyone's view on that aspect of the site. For a lot of folks, it's their entry point into visiting the site, or their the reason why they come in and check out the exhibits here, that because they've, you know, seen the site on a TV show, or they've mm-hmm. read about the site in someone's blog, or they have just, you know, seen that we do paranormal investigations here on a regular basis. And so people come for that sort of thing a lot. And then, they, you know, are able to experience things for themselves, and also, get an idea of, how the site fits into Idaho's history on a larger scale too, while they're here.
And when you talk about the people who we've just talked about, like Raymond Snowden or Lyda or Harry, you know, these are pretty dark people who did some pretty horrific things, but there were thousands of people in and out of that prison. And then into the 70s, maybe 60s, late 60s into the 70s, there were riots because right. of the treatment of the prisoners. And I'm going to guess, you know, the conditions by that point weren't good. Probably overcrowded, I'm not sure.
Yeah. A lot of stories of understaffing and overcrowding plagued the site throughout its entire history.
So when you think about that, there's all this darkness and negativity. And, you know, there's not a lot of good things that happen there when you think about it.
There's stories of redemption, stories of folks who, you know, either found bonds here or found...
I guess Harry would be one of those people.
Yeah, who he found purpose, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, there were folks who went on to be pillars of their community and to establish programs, or, you know, found a new trade, or found community through sports. We have,
yeah,
know, some,
I did read that there was a baseball team
here.
Yeah. So, because I read there was a baseball team.
Yeah, the Outlaws was the
which is a great name for them.
The most prominent baseball iteration of the baseball team here, absolutely. And adjacent to us, the Idaho Botanical Garden, part of their ground is where Outlaw Field was, the baseball stadium at the height of its popularity. And so that's where that name comes from. But I always just like to, you know, point that out. But otherwise, you are right. You know, it was, you know, for most folks, the worst time period of their life, right? Being in prison. And, you know, again, with 130 deaths on site, you know, it there are people who it didn't end well for.
So it closed down in 1973. Did it just sit empty for a long time then? Because I heard that there's still some, you can see some remnants of the prisoners, like calendars on the walls and things like that. Like after Absolutely. The rioting, they didn't necessarily clean it up and throw everything away.
You know, a lot of that was due to the fact that, you know, this was after one of the major riots that the site closed. And so a lot of things had been destroyed. But the positive from that is that, you know, the site was essentially immediately turned over to the Idaho State Historical Society. It never left the hands of the state, right? It just went to a different state agency. And because of that, the site has all of the prison records located in our archives, and then a lot of great artifacts, and a lot of that stuff is still here, from historic signage that gives us a really good idea of how the prisoners live day to day, and how, you know, how they were maneuvered around the site, like traffic, right? Or things that were left in cells. So we've got in Three House, we've got a lot of original artifacts that give you an idea of what the residents kept in their cells, what personal items they had, including calendars and ashtrays, furniture, and headboards that they made in the hobby shops here. And then there's also a lot of things that just are there because they're a part of the foundation. A lot of great etchings and markings and artwork that were left by artwork pieces that were left by the folks who served time here. If you go into Siberia in the cooler and check through those solitary confinement cells, you'll see so many drawings, calendars, tic-tac-toe games, things like that, that were left by the folks who were in there for, you know, months on end and were managed to get something to carve with.
So with the paranormal investigations, you guys have been doing those for quite a while there.
Yes.
And having, yes, and you've had some big TV shows come in and investigate. Has there been any findings or people have shared some experiences that happened to them there that really surprised you? And I should do this in two parts. And have you found some consistencies in the various investigations and what they're reporting back?
Yeah, there are consistencies in the buildings that have more activity. I will say that we've gotten reports of activity or experiences in most every building or part of the site, because most every part of the site has a history behind it, right? But, you know, the places like solitary confinement or maximum security are generally where a lot of folks have found a consensus. One of my absolute favorite stories comes from our, the director of Big River Paranormal, who hosts our paranormal investigations. She was standing in the cooler, one of the solitary confinement rooms, and kind of had her back up against the corner near the doorway and just felt something brush through her hair and something whisper, "Ooh, pretty," as that happened. And she, you know, immediately moved out of that spot. And I was looking at that spot the other day because I happened to be in there, and the way that the paint has peeled and everything, it lit, makes this really great image of a clown face. And so that's what I, when I picture that encounter that she had. And gosh, you know, if any area of the site's going to be, been tied to a dark time in someone's life, then it'd be the cooler Siberia.
Oh yeah.
Every part of the site has, you know, a story to tell.
You do think Raymond is, or let's just say Raymond is still there. Do you have any idea?
A
lot of folks think so. And I've read some things that, and I could see why he would be connected. I could see why Harry would be connected. But have there been any findings where people, they know who's haunting some different locations of the place? Or is it more like footsteps, chairs moving, activity happening, but not attributing it to anybody?
Honestly, something we love to do is hear someone's story or someone's encounter and then look at the history of that building or that area of the site and search for possible connections based on what they saw and what the human history of the building is. So I haven't really talked about the women's ward much, but you know, the women's ward here on site's just right outside of our main entrance. And that's got its own share of stories. One of our previous administrators very vividly remembers opening up that building, which we keep locked at night, and a puff of smoke coming out as she opened it, with you know, no one having been in that building for a good 15 hours, right? And a visitor has told a story of being in the women's ward and hearing the cries of an infant. There were women who were pregnant while they were, you know, incarcerated here on site. No births here on site. We were near a hospital and still are. And so those births didn't occur on site, but there were women who were pregnant while they were incarcerated. And there was also a woman who was incarcerated here named Margaret Brooks, who, as a young woman with some potential, you know, mental health issues, took her infant child and dropped him off the back of a train. So you hear someone's encounter of being in the women's ward and hearing the sounds of a baby crying, you wonder who that could be. And so we then look up the stories of the people who were incarcerated there.
And I've heard some other places who do that as well. And it does kind of, once you do the research it definitely kind of gets narrowed down. Like, it could be this person. It would make sense.
Right, depending upon the time frame.
Yeah, and and what exactly occurred, the paranormal experience that occurred. And so there could have been children living there.
We're also down the street from the Treasure Valley, from the old children's home. That's a lot of time what they would do if a woman had children and was incarcerated here, had a baby and was incarcerated here, that the kids would go to that children's home. There was a woman named Mamie Ross who was incarcerated here, who arrived to turn herself in to begin her sentence, and brought her child with her because she didn't know what else to do. She didn't have any, hadn't, you know, thought of anyone who could take the child or just any alternate arrangement. And so the prison staff, you know, took the child from her and took down the road to the children's home. And the public outcry was so massive that she was released very, very shortly and reunited with her child.
Are there any other interesting stories that have happened to you there, or coworkers, or even somebody who's come in for a tour?
Yeah, I've got to tell you this one. So year before last, as we were regrowing our Halloween events post-COVID, we had a cell decorating contest in Four House, where cells were decorated and people could go around and vote for their favorites and get candy. And staff were down in that bottom level supervising, right? And second floor, we had a stereo system set up with a Halloween playlist going. And the door to get up to the second floor was locked, so all staff were downstairs. The song was The Witch Queen of New Orleans by Redbone. And all of a sudden, the volume of that song just tripled, went up to max. It just all of a sudden, volume way up on that song. So my coworker grabs the keys, goes upstairs, and sees that the volume had been turned all the way up, despite the fact that it was second floor, no one up there, and the door locked to get up there. And so that's one that we have multiple witnesses on. And yeah, and like everyone who was on site was within view. Yeah. And being around Halloween, of course, it's, you know, it's a great story, right? That one's so vivid and so obvious, right?
Speaking of the Halloween attractions, which it makes me kind of laugh that, you know, we're talking about this jail and it's very dark history, and then you have cell decorating contests and you can get candy. But you right. do have a Halloween attraction that you do every year. I'm assuming the month of October, or does it go a little bit longer?
It is pretty much kept to October, but we do several events throughout the month of October. Obviously, due to the interest in paranormal investigations and dark tourism, you know, those are sorts of things that have really built the old Idaho Penitentiary into, you know, one of the most visited places in the state of Idaho, right?
It's always among the,
yeah. And it's always among the very top as far as places to see and most visited attractions here in the state. You know, a lot of that's due to the rising interest mm-hmm. in paranormal investigations and in folks wanting to experience quote unquote abandoned places, right? As a staff, we obviously have and being part of the Idaho State Historical Society, we have, you know, an educational mission and a foundation in which we build our exhibits off of that we've used to really set ourselves apart from other historic prisons by being a site that humanizes are the populace, the people who not only who lived here and worked here. And so we use the research and resources that we have available to us to tell the stories of the people that were incarcerated here, and to allow people to use those fact-based narratives to build their own narrative of how the prison functioned and operated for 101 years. And so we have found over the last few years the need to keep ourselves a destination that folks want to go to for Halloween and for for special events, but also make sure that we are, you know, being respectful of our constituents, our populace, mm-hmm. and the stories that we're entrusted with, right? If the ghosts are here, you have a responsibility to them, right? To tell their stories accurately and respectfully. So we found a balance through our Halloween events. And so we do a paranormal investigation in October. We do behind the scenes tours where folks can go into the dungeon, the upper floors of Three House, the little known areas of the site that you don't get to see on a regular basis. We have an event called Sleepless in Stripes that we do every year in October, where guests can have the opportunity to actually stay in the cells overnight and get a experience what the conditions were like for a good chunk of the prisoners' days, as well as getting to explore the rest of the site, do some special tours, go on a paranormal investigation, all those sorts of things. Their meals are included. And then we have Squawky and Spirits, formerly Frightened Felons, but it's called Squawky and Spirits, which is our signature Halloween event going into its 15th year soon. And that is an event that features a lot of music and entertainment, you know, everything from palm readers to historic artifacts like our historic hearse on display to, you know, photo opportunities and presentations on the ghost stories of the site and haunted attractions. And so what we've done is just make sort of a clear separation between the stories of that we tell as part of our educational mission and the representation of the site through as entertainment, if that makes sense.
Yes. So you do the historical tours year-round, correct?
Correct. And we're open pretty much every day. Yeah.
So people can come for that. Now, the paranormal investigations, do you do some of those year-round, or do you kind of keep that more into that a certain time of year?
We just do it when it's not freezing cold outside. So
yes,
we actually
it would be very
from,
cold in there.
From the spring through to the fall, usually 7 or 8 times a year.
And I'll put a link up on the description of the show where people can go to get more information about the different tours. Where would they need to go to get the information?
Yeah, follow our Facebook or Instagram page for the Old Idaho Penitentiary that we always post when event tickets go on sale. Those are always posted there. But our website's history.idaho.gov, and we have an events listing there.
It would be one of those that getting the historical tour would be really interesting for your paranormal investigation.
Right.
You know, get a little the backstory of what you're dealing with there. I think that could be very interesting.
Big River Paranormal are great partners in that we train them just like we do our tour guides. Get a good foundation in the site's history because they do the same thing that we do. When folks tell us those stories or when we discover someone's experience, we try to connect that to something based within the written history of the site. And the investigators try to do the same thing. So we do give them that background.
Have you ever spent the night?
I have, yes.
How did it go?
Been on the investigation a couple times, and it's the site is different at night than it is during the day.
Oh, I bet. I bet.
It is a different place in the middle of the night, especially as we try to keep most all the lights in the site off during our investigations.
Yeah, and I would just imagine the sounds of it at night are very different than the sounds during the day.
Exactly. It's still, you know, a lot of it's unexplainable, whether it's day or night.
Creepier at night, isn't it?
It absolutely is. It absolutely is. Oh man, it's especially on a fall evening when the wind's blowing. It's something I recommend that everyone experience if they're able to when they're in this area.
And that wraps up our conversation about the Old Idaho Penitentiary with J.C. Brain. If you'd like more information on historical tours and paranormal events, go to history.idaho.gov. You can also find them on Facebook at Old Idaho Penitentiary. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts and you can try it 3 days free. or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. And you can find everything there, also all ad-free. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us at The Grave Talks, thanks for listening.